Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer Podcast, the podcast by filmmakers for filmmakers. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined alongside my co-host Jeff, as always. Jeff and I are writers and directors and passionate about the art of storytelling. Filmmaker Mixer is a creative hub where aspiring and established filmmakers come together to share experiences, insights, strategies, and inspiration. And today we have on the filmmaking team behind a new indie Pure O, writer-director Dylan Tucker and actor Daniel Dorr.
Hello, everybody. This is the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, and today we have filmmaker Dylan Tucker and actor Daniel Dorr on the show. They have a new film that was just released called Pure O. So, Daniel and Dylan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
For having us, guy.
No, happy to have you. I like the movie. I think it's very, very good. Obviously, it's a personal story for you, Dylan. So, I'm curious. Well, let's start here. For those who haven't seen it, or haven't had a chance to look at the trailer yet, why don't you tell us, what is Pure O?
Pure O is stands for Purely Obsessional OCD. So it's a subset of OCD, but it doesn't have any physical convulsions. It's not like maybe a lot of our listeners are thinking about flicking off light switches and rearranging objects, stepping over cracks. It's all invisible inside one's mind, and it's sort of it's about a series of obsessions and compulsions, and it works the same way as physical OCD, but it's revolves around certain taboo themes in one's head, and you're going through that obsessive compulsive cycle inside your own brain.
You know, and speaking of that, one of my questions, one of the things I was curious about, since it's a personal story, and since you're talking about things going on inside, you know, your head, what was your process to take, you know, that experience and translate it into a film with a three-act structure and telling a story? I mean, you've got the backdrop of OCD, but still you have to tell a story. And you do a great job. It's a good story. Acting is fantastic. I'm just curious, was it an intuitive process, or did you actually beat out the story and try to figure out what the structure is? How did you come up with the actual story?
Sure. Yeah, I thought about that a lot because obviously it's an invisible illness inside your head. So the magic trick of it all was, how do you take that and transcribe it into cinematic language? And I knew that I wanted to keep the film really grounded and very natural. I wanted to give a really authentic and naturalistic depiction of this disease on film. But the trick being, well, it's inside your mind. So I wanted to sort of resist the cheat code of just sort of like cutaways into what he's seeing. And I wanted to make sure that this was staying in the world of reality. So that was what I tried. And so the way I did that is there's a couple little stylistic choices that are very subtle in the film, but everything's through the point of view of Cooper. And so when he's experiencing these obsessions or compulsions or these, you know, panic attacks in his head, there's little subtle tricks with the camera, but that's very grounded in reality. And I didn't want to do any sort of that cutaway stuff. And I think it works well for the film. And the reason I did that is because OCD is so misrepresented in the media. And so often people with OCD are a quirky detective or people like that. And I wanted to show really sort of the harrowing experience that people really go through with this. And I thought that the only way to do that was to not, you know, not use any of those cheats, and like I wanted it to feel like almost like a cinema verite, like documentary style film, so that people could really not have their brains working in sort of cinematic language and reality. I wanted it to be sort of stuck in reality the whole time and make it feel very real.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me to asking you, Daniel, kind of taking Dylan's vision of non-acting, kind of being in reality. I know, I believe you knew Dylan from the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. So I'm curious how you, you know, got involved with the project, what you thought when he called you up, and how you prepared for the film.
Yeah. Dylan and I are alumni of the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And we, you know, we've been friends for a while. We knew each other socially. And then every time we hung out, I think we spoke the same language as far as like cinema and movies that we liked are concerned. And I mean, he literally called me up out of the blue one day and was like, "Hey man, I wrote this. First of all, I don't know if you know this about my life, but you know, this is something that I went through and I've now turned it into a semi-autobiographical feature. I think you might be the guy to play it. Would you take a look at the script?" And I read it and I absolutely I was just so taken by it. I was really so thrilled by the story that he was telling. So that's kind of the genesis of how I became involved. It kind of was very it was very organic and very very natural. And then as far as preparation goes, I mean, I spent a lot of time with Dylan. We talked a lot about his experience and what he went through. And that was, of course, you know, this incredible gift to have on set. I had like the ultimate bullshit detector on set to sort of guide me through Cooper's journey. But at the same time, you know, we were very clear that I wasn't, you know, playing Dylan in any way. You know, Cooper's Cooper, and this is his experience that's happening, and what is my version of that, and how am I going to bring it to life? And I don't know how much you want to go into like preparation or acting, kind of like nerdy stuff,
I
but
no, I would be curious about that because, and we talk about this with other actors. You know, it's your job to read a script and then take those words, the dialogue, screen direction, all those things, and make it three-dimensional, make it visual. You know, it's you can't just you've got to bring your art to the table. And when you have a friend call you up and ask you to do something that's this personal, that's kind of a big ask. And so I imagine there was a lot of pressure. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't, because I'm sure you really wanted to do justice to his story. So how did you prepare? I'm curious.
It is. I mean, it's like you say. I mean, there was a tremendous amount of pressure to honor not only Dylan's story, but the film as a whole. I, you know, care deeply about this story. I think it's an important story to tell. I think, you know, it's filled with universal themes, so you know, you don't have to have OCD to hook into it and see yourself or a friend or a family member in any one of these characters. So I felt a lot of pressure. At the same time, you know, I just decided to hand myself over to not knowing. I think I did all the good actor work of like, you know, I prepped, I did research, I read a book that Dylan had recommended early on, how to living with someone who has OCD by who's it, Dylan? Who's the
John Hirschfeld, yeah, when a family member has OCD.
when a family member has OCD. So I did it all due diligence, but at some point I think very early on in the filming, I realized that, oh, this character doesn't have his shit together at all. And if I'm trying as the actor to somehow play this part, you know, and be very technical about it, I don't think it's going to work. I have to like trust.
When you, what do you mean when you say be very technical about it? What do you mean exactly?
I mean, I think that there's a tendency with certain roles, depending on what the material is, whether it's a play, whether it's Shakespeare, you know, I mean, depending on what the role is, there is a certain level of like, well, who is this character? Where are they coming from? Where are they going? Backstory, physical tics, manifestations, how do they walk? How do they talk? You know, there's a lot of like actor work that one can do, and it depends on what the material is. But for this,
Right.
I very quickly realized that, I simply have to walk around as a shell of a person as much as I can, right? So what does Daniel have to do in order to show up to set every day and be as open and as chaotic and as raw as possible? And it was a kind of a harrowing, I mean, 28 days of shooting, you know, walking around kind of like an open wound, you know?
Super, super vulnerable, it sounds.
Super vulnerable all the time, feeling
Yeah.
exposed. Am I doing this right? I mean, letting all of those things develop anyways for you know, for I think most actors, all those insecurities, letting that live and not pretending that it's not there, right? I obviously don't have OCD, but I can certain anxieties and fears and things that I experience as Daniel, if I let those come out to the surface, then the camera's gonna pick it up. And I think
Yeah.
sort of went hand in hand with what Dylan's approach was for it to be as real as possible, that it should feel like a documentary. And as long as I lived in that space, the camera would pick it up. You know, I didn't have to do anything, which was also in many ways a trust exercise that I think that Dylan and I then sort of engineered, that I trusted him to sort of, you know, hold space for that.
Yeah.
I love that. That's also meta because OCD is all about control, right? And it's all about trying to gain control about like what if blank, and it's always some theme that's just you can never really get to the bottom of, and so it's you're always trying to control the uncontrollable. And so this like actor who's playing this dude and is just consciously trying to be like, I'm gonna just embrace that, and like the fear of that, because as an actor I'm sure that's really scary to step into that, and there was a lot of trust involved in it. And and Daniel was so game, you know, and to everything he said, you know, it was like I told him, hey man, I don't want any of this to be sentimental in the performance of it, nothing nostalgic, like just nothing but just unsentimental work with this film. And I don't want it to be you playing me. I want it to be you playing as much of you as possible. So let's like really find that edge of that boundary together of like how much of this character is like Daniel and how much of it is not like Daniel at all. And let's bring as much of this as you are willing to do, to the character and, you know, of yourself. And he was so game, him and Hope, who played the lead in the film, and their real life couple as well. And that was intentional. And would really have a lot of conversations with them along the way of like, you know, this is how the scene's written, but like, kind of, how do you guys argue, or what are your guys' pet names, and what's your stuff? And then they'd kind of go away and powwow and figure out like, we don't really, that's a little too personal and intimate, and we need a little bit more distance from the character, and so we want to do this. And I was always like, cool, man, like, as far as you guys want to take it, I'm obviously going to find that line and push you to bring as much of yourselves as possible. As far as, you know, we had, you know, Daniel and Hope would bring stuff from their apartment to put on the set in the apartment, and, you know, and we'd mix in, you know, even the wardrobe was just like a mixture of my clothing and Daniel's clothing. And, you know, we just sort of just tried to find that blend. And the same thing with, we casted some non-actors in the film as well. And so everything just sort of like being this docu-style, but really shooting it in a traditional film way and shooting a narrative film, but with sort of a little bit of these flourishes to hopefully mix it up for the viewer when they're watching the film, to where you don't really know when the acting's starting and what's more documentary style, and having it all blend together in the film to hopefully just create, you know, a realistic, natural experience that doesn't quite feel like a documentary, but maybe doesn't quite feel exactly like a movie, and trying to find that sweet spot where it just is living in its own space.
Yeah, I'm curious, kind of like what you're saying, Dylan, with blending reality with, of course, feature, and kind of using personal stuff to help resonate with you as well. I'm curious, as the filmmaker, were there any moments in the script that were maybe pulled directly from your own experiences, or maybe you just wrote a scene and when you're filming it on the day particularly resonated with you that you didn't think would when writing it originally?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that this whole approach to the project started before I even, in the writing process for me. So before I was even bringing in cast and crew and actors, I was already thinking about this approach and in the spirit of what we're talking about. Like, absolutely, there's fully truthful scenes in the film. There's, you know, there's some stuff that's connective tissue that's put together and kind of like mixing it all in together like a soup. So it doesn't feel too, obviously I am telling a narrative structure here, but I think back to Jeff's point earlier, I wouldn't say that I put out like big beats. I mean, obviously it's semi-autobiographical and it's based on my life, so I kind of know where it's going. And also it is sort of a slice of life movie, so it wasn't a film that I necessarily wanted to be like, here's the beginning, middle, and end in a perfect way. It's just sort of like we're picking up with this guy's life, and we're here with them, and then it's, you know, you get closure in the film, but in terms of an ending, it's sort of, you know, it's sort of like, oh, this guy's life is going to keep going. And so it's what could happen next. And it's not like this, there's a finality to it in that sense. And that was all a structural choice from the beginning. And I saw an interview with Alfonso Cuarón one time, and he was talking about, I think when he was writing Roma, and how he normally has his collaborators within Iñárritu and Guillermo del Toro. And he normally like writes a script, and right away he sends it to them, and then they talk about it. That with Roma, it was totally different because it was like this memory piece. And so he wanted to just write it from memory and kind of create it. And he didn't want to show it to them at all because he knew exactly what they were going to say. And he was like, this is how we're going to cut it up in X, Y, and Z. And we're going to create a three-act structure and do the whole thing. And that he intentionally didn't want to do that, that he just wanted to sort of trust himself that he had been doing it long enough that he sort of had an intuitive narrative structure to it as he was writing it, and just trust that. So I kind of did that as well, not to compare myself necessarily to Alfonso by any means, but I have been at this for a while now, and I'm sort of mid-career. And even though it's my first directorial feature, I've written and starred in features, and I've been in the game for over 20 years and written a lot. And so I kind of just had that inherent trust in myself to be like, I think I inherently have a bit of structure internally. So let me just sort of focus on this like memory piece and see how it kind of ends up. And I kind of stuck to that. I think that, you know, the draft that we shot was pretty early on. I didn't do a ton of rewrite.
I was going to ask, excuse me, that style, that memory piece style. I'm curious how many drafts it took you to kind of figure it out, but it sounds like you figured it out fairly quickly.
I did. And again, things come up, production comes up, things change, you know, you're working on an indie film budget. So maybe this location turns into that location and some stuff needs to change in that sense. But in terms of the heart of the story and in terms of like the piece, it wasn't a ton. And I have other films that maybe it works better the other way. You rewrite and you rewrite and you rewrite. And it just, I think it's very project dependent. I don't think that there's a right or wrong way. I think it's just depends on what piece you're making. But for this, I wanted to try to stick close to that. And also it was a very early draft. It was the first or second draft that I brought to my creative collaborators, Ricky Fosheim, who helped make the film, and he was a producer and a DP, and some other friends who I showed the project to. And like very early on, they were like, oh, this is it. It's working. It's already working. So it's one of those things, I didn't want to mess with it too much. And I didn't want to, you know, filmify it, for lack of a better word, and try to turn it into that structure. I wanted to, it's all a trust exercise. I guess a lot of this film was, down to what Daniel was talking about. I think the making of the film, it was kind of a trust exercise to sort of be like, okay, can I just trust that there's enough there and there's enough going on, and I'll bring in really great actors and I speak to it. I think that, you know, writing and acting is the lifeblood of cinema. It's the most important thing, and that everything's obviously important, but if you sort of are the other areas of film, people, an audience will sort of forgive. But as long as you have incredible writing and acting, you're sort of, you'll go along for the ride. And I really believe that. So I knew that if I could bring in a lot of really talented people like Daniel and other people that I've gotten to know over the years during my time in Los Angeles, I kind of felt good about it. So I didn't want to mess with it too much. I wanted to just trust that it was working on the page. Everybody I was sending it to was connecting to. So why mess with it?
Well, speaking of a trust exercise, as you mentioned, you have a real life couple in the film. Mm-hmm. Hope Lauren plays opposite you, you know, Daniel, in the film, and you're a real life couple. I'm curious, did the real life relationship add a unique layer to the depth of your relationship on screen, or did it present any unexpected challenges? What was that like, working with someone in a film that's this intense, working with someone so close to you?
I think that it really, for all of the, without giving too much away about what happens in the story, I think for all of the, I think, natural anxieties that might come up for a couple playing, you know, these two characters who go through a very, very difficult and challenging time in their lives and in their relationship. I'd be lying if I said I didn't have, you know, I wasn't, you know, not worried, but, you know, like, what is it going to bring up? What's it going to unleash, you know?
Yeah.
But at the, you know, on the other side of it, it was only a positive experience. I think that because we've worked together before, so it wasn't like, well, I hope this is going to be a good experience for both of us. There's a lot of trust there. So going to those scary places, going to those very, very scary places, it allowed us to go there and to come back much quicker because there was this inherent amount of trust there between the two of us. You know, I felt so safe working with her, and I Hope and I have done a few interviews, so I'm sure she wouldn't mind me speaking for her. But I think that we just are able to hold space for each other in a very, special way as partners and as actors, that, there was no breaking in period of like getting to know each other and how do we relate to one another as these two people. It was just sort of this built-in thing, obviously. And it allowed me as Daniel playing Cooper to go to all the places that I had to go to, because I knew that she would hold me.
What were the rides home at the end of a day like?
They were much more, I think, chill than one would imagine, you know.
Decompressing.
decompressing and just kind of, you know, what are you gonna do for dinner tonight? Or, you know, are you going to take the dog out or should I? I think, you know, we left work at work and came home and sort of,
that's,
you know,
good.
had to also fill our tanks and sort of like not be thinking about the movie. You know, there wasn't a lot of like, I mean, there was a lot of talking about backstory. And I think that Hope and I did a very good job of, you know, creating a certain amount of boundaries between our relationship and their relationship. Cooper and Emily in the film are, you know, they're not Hope and Daniel. And of course lines are blurred and it becomes a little bit murky, as one would hope it would. But, it was easy to step in and out of it, which I found surprising. I thought we would take things home. I thought it would, you know, live with us a little bit more than it did. And I'm glad it didn't. I'm glad we were able to sort of differentiate and be like, that is
surprising, you know, that's, and that's good. But you know, the thing is, it's an intense role for the both of you, but also sure. Just filmmaking is intense. So, you know, it's just, you've got not just the performance, but you know, it's like you're going to battle every day trying to make a film. And so that decompression is probably important. So that's awesome that you guys were able to work that out and work together and have such a great time doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt very lucky we had each other and, you know, that Dylan trusted us to take on these roles. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience, really. It was indie making at its finest.
Yeah, well, staying on the acting subject, I think, you know, you kind of hit on the why on this question, which is like the decision to also work with non-actors and mixing them with professional actors. I'm curious, for both of you, maybe Dylan first, then you, Daniel, what was it like working with the non-actors? Is it an experience you've had before? Was it surprisingly easier, harder, all that stuff?
I thought it was definitely easier on my end of it, I guess, for multiple reasons. One, it was the style of the film, again, to what going for naturalism, it was great to bring people in where it's like, listen, you haven't acted, but like, you don't have to act, like just be yourself on camera, which sometimes is tricky for people. That's a trickier ask than you think. But luckily I had some people that were game to do that. And also it was really great because they specifically, I was casting non-actors either like in the therapy groups that have OCD or at the rehab being like real life drug and alcohol counselors. And so for the actors that were on set that don't have OCD or, you know, haven't been to rehab or worked in a rehab, they were also like a secondary resource on set for my other actors to go to. So whether it was the OCD groups, you know, I'm directing and I'm wearing a lot of hats and I'm getting a lot of questions all over the place. If I'm not available, there was other people there. And, you know, I think I caught some conversations with Daniel and other people like in the, you know, in the waiting in the green room, hanging out and being like, you know, just sort of getting into natural conversations about either what it's like in the groups or what it's like at the rehabs. And so I think it was, for me, it was, I didn't have any issues with anybody that I cast that was non-actors. They just brought themselves to it and they were incredibly naturalistic and didn't push. You know, I was there just sort of like, just to protect the rails, you know, and make sure they're not, you know, pushing or indicating or, you know, and I thought it was great. How was it for you, Daniel?
It was amazing. I think it's amazing working with people that aren't, I mean, non-actors, but just people that are doing it for the first time. You know, they don't have like, they don't know anything. So they're just present and they're in the moment. And then it pulls us who are, you know, have studied and trained, whatever. It gets you out of your head and it makes you that much more present and alive in the moment because these, you know, all the actors, and especially in the group therapy sessions and in the rehab, they were just like out of life. Like, it was amazing. There was no acting happening, you know?
Yeah, it also brought a cool energy to set where it's just like, you know, we all work in the film industry and a lot of us on set have been at this a long time. So there's just a jadedness that comes in this industry that we've all experienced. And so to get a couple people who are just stoked to be on a film set and have never been there, and they're just like, I think that energy is a little infectious, you know, and you kind of, you would have those moments or those sort of beginner moments, you know, with an actor who's like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing this scene. I've never acted, and to be able to just sort of like laugh it off and be like, dude, we're just making a movie. And to sort of let that, you know, we're dealing with heavy subject matter in the film, you know, so they always say that. I think that the heaviest subject matter in films kind of creates the lightest sets and vice versa a lot of times. And because you have to, just to everything we were just talking to in terms of just keeping it light and the decompression is like, save it for the camera, you know, and it's like, keep it light. And I think that it just brought a really cool atmosphere to set. And I think it helps that a lot of the people that I cast that were non-actors have very like jovial, fun personalities and just brought a really good energy to the set as well.
Well, one of the things I'm always curious about with directors who have an acting background is how that acting background informs their directing. And I've asked that question to other directors, but I'm going to flip it this time. Daniel, I'm going to ask you,
sure.
How do you think Dylan's acting background informed him on communicating with you as a director, as a director to an actor?
There's just a comfort there and an ease, you know. We speak the same language, you know. He can give me a suggestion or, you know, talk to me just in a different way. None of it's technical. Everything is coming from usually, you know, an emotional place, or I don't know. I find it so much more comforting to be directed by an actor, because I can also be like, hey, does this work? Do we dial it up here? You know, is it coming across? And he would just be there to kind of settle my nerves and you know, reassure me the entire time in just a different way, because it was coming from an emotional place and from a different sort of understanding, you know. And Dylan's also just a great, you know, a great actor anyways. So there's just a mutual respect there, I think. Not that I'm saying that I'm a great actor, but you know what I mean? Like,
oh, come on, man. Oh, no, you are a great actor. You crushed it in this movie.
Well, Dylan, you mentioned this was your first feature directorial thing. I'm curious how maybe you, when stepping into the directing role, what you maybe wanted to do differently as being an actor, previously being directed by other people. Was there anything that you thought about doing differently going into this movie?
Yeah, I did it a lot. It's one thing that, you know, all the departments went out, and obviously when you're on a film set, every moment is different, and a different department maybe has to went out for a different reason, right? You know, a lot of it's like the lights on this side, the lights on that side, or, you know, you got to get out of a location, and so you're kind of dictated, but as much as possible, I knew from my experience acting that, like, we weren't able to shoot two camera. Shot two camera for a couple scenes, but a lot of it we had to shoot single camera for a lot of stuff. And when you have a really emotional scene, there's nothing worse than being the receiver in that scene that's not the one that's super emotional, and you do your coverage first, and then you go to the other person who's like really like driving the scene and is emotional, and you see what they're doing, and you're like, oh shit, I would have totally done this differently. Like they're like my reactions like weren't there, and it's going to edit weird. I think that it's always better. You got to just so I guess, sorry, I'm kind of going off here. I think that just asking an actor like in a scene, like, hey, like, how are you guys feeling? Like, who wants to cover off first here? You know, like, I think asking your actors that, I've never been asked that as an actor. And I just knew that I was like, listen, again, going back to what I was speaking to earlier, of just like a philosophy of film, that like acting and writing are the lifeblood of cinema, and that's the films that I like. So let's prioritize that. Like, I don't mind if maybe like the lighting's not perfect in this scene. Obviously, everybody's fighting for their own department, right? And everything, you want everything to be perfect. But at some point, a lot of times as a director, you got to make the decision of we're going with this or we're going with that. So just really checking in with actors and being like, hey, who wants to go first? And I think in general, if there's a scene where somebody's like highly emotional and another person's maybe trying to calm them down, I think it's always better to start with the person who's emotional so that the other person knows, oh, okay, I saw what they were doing and I saw like what level they were at. So I know, and ideally you want everybody to be bringing it every time, but a lot of times when you're shooting single camera, you gotta keep that tank full, and you can't be bringing it 100% every take. And there's a lot of weighty emotional scenes in this movie, so that was definitely a conscious thing I think I did that kind of was informed by my acting background. And I think there was a lot of other things too that I could go into, but
yeah. And yeah, I'll also just say, like, I mean, it did sort of, you know, and speaking to like how it ultimately felt like we were making a semi-documentary by the end of it, I think you really engineered a set where it didn't feel like a set. It didn't feel like, all right, and now we're going to call action. You know, these little things that I think actors would appreciate, where Dylan would say, whenever you're ready, you know, there wasn't like, all right, action, and now we're acting and we got to play the scene. There was a kind of a smoothness to sort of how we weaved in and out of scenes and went from one day to the next that I really appreciated. You know, it made me forget about performing and that there's a camera there. And I do think that was intentional.
That was definitely another one. Yeah, I don't call action on set. I definitely do. Well, I sometimes will just even wait and won't say anything and just let the cameras roll. And I like to, because especially for this, I picked up a lot of those little moments. And I also like to let the camera roll for longer when, you know, whenever you're going to call cut, just like waiting just a little bit longer, see if maybe somebody improvs a line, see if there's a little piece of something, you know, especially for a film like this where you want naturalistic stuff, because I think that actors, all of us as humans, I mean, once you know the camera's rolling, there's always a part of our brains that just knows that and is aware of that. And so trying to do things like film the rehearsal and don't tell the actors, I would tell Ricky every time when we were doing a rehearsal, I'm like, you film every rehearsal and just we'll figure it out. Like I as much of them not knowing that the camera's on them as possible, even the best actors, I just think that there's something psychological there of like when you don't know and you're a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more relaxed. I mean, sometimes things come out of that, and it's what everything Daniel's talking about. I think a lot of stuff with acting, especially with a film that's taking this approach, is to just cram and cram and cram and do the homework and get it all in there. And then once you're going, just let that go, just like let it go. Trust that it's in there and that it's living and it's breathing inside of you. And that it's just going to sort of like come out. And I think a lot of that happens kind of in the ins and outs of scenes. And so a lot of times like the camera would be rolling and I'd maybe like wait a little longer to even say when you're ready to see kind of like how it was going and to see what was happening before. I think all those little things were definitely things that were informed by my background as an actor, for sure.
Well, I'm also curious, if I understand correctly, it sounded like you used a lot of practical lighting. You tried to have a small footprint of how you were lighting the scenes. Was that decision also for the naturalistic feel and to not be so, not to have a movie set, quote unquote, but let people feel more natural and that documentary style? What led to that decision?
Yeah, that was absolutely something that Ricky and I, my DP, came up with. But we talked about that a lot earlier, where I wanted to take this idea of like, what's like the littlest amount of light we can use to light this scene? And how can we do it with a practical, where, because I told him, he knows me and we've known each other a long time and he knows my whole philosophy of cinema. And he knew that I was going to just want to let my actors move and we're going to find them. And it's like acting above all else and all of that. He knew all that. So we wanted to light it in that way. And, you know, I'm a big Gordy Willis guy and like, you know, the Prince of Darkness. And I thought that that really worked for a lot of the interiors. And, you know, we just really did that. We used practicals and we would just set them up around. And a lot of the scenes, you know, it's an indie film, so we didn't get a ton of rehearsal time on set. Actually, the rehearsals, a lot of the camera rehearsals were just me acting with a mic stand. Actually,
oh, no kidding.
Me and Ricky spent like
that's some great behind the scenes footage.
Oh my God, you should see it. We have all this test video of it where we're like in the apartment. And I'm like, all right, obviously, like, we'll wait till Daniel gets in and we want to trust his instincts and see what he's going to do. But kind of here's my instincts as an actor. I think I'd kind of be like this. And I put a hat on top of a mic stand and we would just move it around the apartment.
You just need like little paper faces or something.
Oh, we totally did. Oh, you should see the, because I'm not a big like shotless guy either. I came up with like a lens arc that was tied to the whole film and like, kind of moving from long lenses to short lenses for certain characters and all these different things. So you would just sort of know where you're at in the scene and we're like, cool, we're on like page 10. So we're on about like whatever it is, like we're 70 mil here for whatever the character was and for different reasonings. And so, yeah, there's Ricky has a lot of like these funny shot lists of the way I work. Yeah, it was very idiosyncratic and funny, but Ricky and I have known each other for years and it worked really well for us. And we have all of these sort of like test footage of just us, me and Ricky in a mic stand, just going around and setting up shots. And actually, I have to say most of it like stuck, you know, and it would be like, hey, all right, you guys come in and get Daniel and Hope and be like, here's me in the mic stand. And this is what was going on. But like, how are you guys feeling? What are your instincts here? And, you know, there was obviously like tweaks and stuff, but I think for the most part, it kind of held up and, and they were very giving and very professional and were like, even stuff that was like, oh yeah, that wasn't necessarily a thing, but I can make that work, you know, I can do it like that. Or and we'd be like, okay, great. Just because at that point it's sort of like, you know, you're shot listing and you kind of know that you want to move it from here to there and the way you want, way I want to cut a scene. It helped that I was editing the film. So I kind of knew like, oh, this is kind of how I want to edit it. So can we make it work? And if not, that's fine. Cause again, I always want to give agency to my actors and be like, if it's not going to work, then that's the most important. I'll figure it out. But if we can make it work, it'd be great if we could do it like this, you know?
But well, does Daniel's mic stand get stand-in credit or?
I think we joked about it at some point. At some point we joked about like putting it in the crawl and like giving the mic a character name.
That's funny. Well, I know the film is just now coming out. So tell folks where they can find it.
Sure. Yeah. It's available US, Canada, the UK and Australia. And most of those, I think it's Amazon, Apple, Google Play. In America, I know it's on cable boxes like Spectrum and things like that. I think that's it for now. I think it's some of those territories a little different, but I think Amazon and Apple are a go-to for all territories. And then there's some ancillary outlets as well.
Well, that's awesome. Well, congratulations on the film and getting it completed, getting it sold, getting it out there for everybody to see. And definitely whenever you guys are working on something new, you know, hit us up. We'd like to chat again.
Oh, absolutely. This has been lovely. Thanks for talking with us.
All right, guys. Well, you take care.
Thank you for listening to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, a podcast created and hosted by filmmakers Jeff Stolen and Andrew Lamping and produced by Melody Lopez.
Our theme song was composed by Stephen D. Bennett.
Make sure to follow or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on and stay tuned for future episodes.